You are listening to Climate Litigation Cases in Asia Pacific, a step closer to climate justice, a podcast by Real World Radio and Friends of the Earth Asia Pacific. Climate litigation is an increasingly common area of environmental law that people are using to hold countries and public corporations to account for contributing to the climate crisis. In 2021, Friends of the Earth Netherlands won a landmark victory for climate justice in the People vs. Shell climate case. Now, Friends of the Earth Asia Pacific member groups are turning to the courts in their struggle for climate justice. In 2022, residents of Pari Island in Indonesia launched a legal proceeding against Holcim, a Swiss-based global salmon company, for the company's contribution to climate change, which threatens their island and livelihoods. Holcim's emission reduction plans actually fall far short of what is needed to achieve the goal of limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees. Therefore, the Swiss company bears both a historical responsibility for the current climate crisis and a share of responsibility for future warming and its impacts on Pari Island. 11% of the island has already submerged into the sea, and it's predicted that most of the island could be submerged by early 2050. This poses a serious threat to the rights and very existence of Pari's residents. We will now hear from Pari Ridwanuddin, a campaigner with WALI, Friends of the Earth Indonesia, who spoke to Real World Radio about the case.
So especially about Pari Island, we have long struggle with them since long time ago, especially 10 years ago when they facing land grabbing. So we support their struggle. We now see in Indonesia and also in the across the world, many youth peoples, they discuss about climate issue more frequent, and this situation is very good for raising campaign and climate litigation in Indonesia and in the world. Of course, we usually use simple explanation that they have rights to exist, right to survive, right to live and to have family, and this argumentation we know as intergenerational justice issue. And in Indonesia, especially in small island, we raise the vulnerability of small island because in global south we are most affected area or most affected communities, especially in archipelagic state like Indonesia, and especially people who live in the coastal and small island area. Why? Because every day they have to face danger from the sea, high wave, tidal flood, and then the sinking of coastal area and small island area. So this is the simple explanation about the legal argument why they have to choose climate litigation. So we discuss with the local community. The process was started by consolidation process, which was conducted last year in 2022. They need at least 3 months for this process, for conciliation process. And in the end, Holcim, they refuse our demand. And finally, we continue to climate sue process, which was conducted last February this year. And we will have long process. We also in Pari Island case, we will need long process for this case because we have to follow Switzerland law system, not Indonesian law system. Now in Indonesia, we just have environment law system. So we don't have yet climate law system. So this is a big challenge for our struggle in Indonesia. But now we strongly demand for climate change bill or climate justice bill in Indonesia. And WALI is important part who strongly fight for this bill. Now in Indonesia, also our law system is product of oligarch or product of political and economical interest. So we have to change from two sides. The first, we have to change the structure of parliament because now mostly the composition was filled by oligarch who struggle for extractive industry. But in the future, we have to change this issue or this situation. Our parliament has to filled by people who will stand for climate justice, and also we strongly demand for new president next year who will stand for climate justice. In our legislation process, the voices of people who affected by climate crisis didn't considered by government and parliament. So we have to raise this issue in wider field such as media, universities, religious leader forums, human rights commission body. We have to build wider arena for this fight. We hope that Pari Islands peoples will win the climate litigation and Holcim will pay for three demands: mitigation, adaptation, and loss and damage.
Russia is the fourth largest emitter of greenhouse gases in the world. At the same time, the average temperature in the country is rising twice as much as the world average. In response, in September 2022, a diverse group of Russian activists launched the first ever climate lawsuit in Russia. The case was filed before the Supreme Court of the Russian Federation, demanding the Russian authorities to take measures to reduce emissions in line with Paris Agreement targets to limit global average temperature rise to 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels. By not taking sufficient measures to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, the Russian authorities are violating the Russian Constitution and the European Convention on Human Rights, to which Russia was a party until September 2022. This court case may well be the last opportunity for the ECHR to issue a binding decision and protect the rights of Russian citizens to a safe environment. Vitaly Servetnik from the Russian Social Ecological Union, Friends of the Earth Russia, explains the demand presented to the Russian authorities.
The Russian climate lawsuit, that's a case of the Russian people against the Russian government, basically on the inaction on the Russia's part on the Paris Agreement. With the current plans that Russia have now, there is no way to meet 1.5 degrees that supposed to be. With the current plans of Russia, that would be the trajectory of 4 degrees, which is unacceptable. So basically we trying to dispute two governmental acts. First one is presidential decree on the reducing greenhouse gas emissions from 2020, and another one is the government approved strategy on the socio-economic development of Russia with low greenhouse gas emissions, and that's until 2050. And lawyers analyzed both of these documents and concluded that it's absolutely insufficient for meeting Russia's obligations and meeting 1.5 degrees goals in reduction of the emissions. In this case, we have a really great and diverse group of people and organizations among the plaintiffs. We have environmental activists and environmental experts, affected indigenous people and local inhabitants. Especially we focus on the youth people that will have to live with the consequences of the climate change. Also, we have human rights activists and lawyers. So this all these different perspectives of differently affected groups and people, also from different regions, different age groups. We filed the case to the Supreme Court because we believe that this governmental inaction contradicts with the Russian Constitution and the right for the safe environment for the Russian population. Almost in a week from that was dismissed by the court, but then we sent an appeal to the Supreme Court, which also was refused, and now another complaint is being looked from the supervisory, so it's called now supervisory appeal with the presidium of the Supreme Court. So if we're talking about the difficulties, then I would say that in general it's hard to talk about the legal system in the current Russia in general. I mean, we started planning the lawsuit long before the war started. It took several years to discuss with all the plaintiffs from different communities and experts and lawyers, etc. So it took a while. And of course, the war influenced that quite a lot. And we even paused that process because of the shock that we had, questioning how relevant that would be. But in the end, we decided to proceed forward anyway, because the climate crisis does not stop from the war, but only accelerate further. So we decided to file the case in September. The first difficulty we had, the few days after we announced about the lawsuit, we had a threat from the head of the third biggest party in Russian parliament that publicly said that instead of considering our lawsuit itself, the applicants should be investigated for doing that. But this is the kind of general situation with persecution in Russia, that many horrible things happening, but also with people who participate in the lawsuit. That's also true that we didn't believe much in the current legal system in Russia, and we kind of expected that most likely that we will lose on the national level. But anyway, we wanted to set a precedent at the national level, so for the history of the country's legal system, and the next step would be the seeking justice internationally. So we will appeal to the European Court on Human Rights, and we will have the better times in Russia, then such decision will be ready kind of to move forward the action on climate in Russia, and therefore we kind of preparing the ground for the steps right now. In general, we hope that the policy towards the proper climate action will change, and the emissions will be reduced dramatically, and also that will be in protection of the affected people. But that requires not only the legal kind of demands, that requires also mobilization and a lot of advocacy, so that only another kind of brick in the whole process.
Banks and financiers are the lifeblood of the fossil fuel companies driving the climate crisis. In 2019, Friends of the Earth Australia and survivors of devastating bushfires launched a claim against ANZ Bank under international law for financing climate change. In 2021, 2 years after the case was filed, an independent examiner determined that ANZ's practices were consistent with the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development guidelines on multinational enterprises. However, the independent examiner called for the OECD guidelines to be updated to address human rights threats caused by climate change. Friends of the Earth Australia have said that the ruling highlights the need for Australia to follow other countries and pass new climate finance laws to hold companies accountable. Sam Cosar Gilbert from Friends of the Earth Australia told us the whole story of the legal fight against ANZ Bank.
We were bringing the complaint against ANZ for not disclosing properly their emissions or their lending, their financing to harmful companies. We were also saying that they had inadequate systems of due diligence and environmental management because their investments in fossil fuels and lack of policies to reduce their exposure to fossil fuels, and that they were misleading the public in terms of their green credentials. They were greenwashing. So we always see litigation within a bigger strategy. It was really like an international complaint embedded in a much bigger strategy. We think it's very important to have binding rules on companies to hold them responsible for their environmental and human rights violations. So this complaint was part of a much bigger campaign with our allies to get legislative change and to hold companies accountable. It's a very limited mechanism, and unfortunately we were not successful in the complaint. It's important to note that this is kind of an arbiter system or an ombudsperson system. It's not a formal legal process, and that's part of its weakness as well. It's very hard to bring a legal case in the actual Australian courts. It's also very expensive to do so. So our organisation and the community groups, we did not have enough funding and resources to bring a formal legal case. So we used this ombudsman process. And I think that really shows some of the challenges of engaging the legal process as a grassroots organisation. The cost is very high, at least in the Australian case. This mechanism, it did enable us to at least file the complaint, to be there and to do it, but often they're called quasi-judicial ombudsman mechanisms do not have enough strength. So even if we had have won the complaint, it's kind of non-enforceable and very difficult to enforce. So it's a real reason about why we need much better access to justice and much better laws around the environment and human rights. We thought it was really important to highlight the community voices, and in this case, the bushfire survivors, those impacted by climate change. So in all of the media work that we did, their voices were centred also in speaking directly with the bank or speaking with the arbiter. So they were really central to the process. And I think even though we were unsuccessful in the legal aspect or the complaint aspect of the case, we were able to get a lot of media attention and to really have the debate about responsibility for climate action in the public sphere. And I think ultimately it strengthens our much bigger campaign for legal change and the change of the laws to hold these companies accountable. So we're really calling on the government to pass new laws that would hold these companies accountable. And it links in very strongly with Friends of the Earth International's UN binding treaty work. We know we need laws at the national level, but we also know that we need an international treaty, a binding instrument to hold these companies accountable with regards to human rights. Because too often, multinational enterprises are allowed to use their structure to avoid responsibility. The legal avenue is worthwhile, and many groups are using it and having victories. I think what we see is it's part of a much broader strategy. We need to build the movement, we need to mobilise people, we need to engage and change the paradigm around environmental responsibility, climate change and business crimes. And I think in this complaint that we had, we were able to really use it to mobilise our members and to support people and to change the narrative. So I think those elements were important. We'll consider more these sorts of actions in the future. They're definitely not off the table. I think there were a number of positives that came from it. In the ruling itself, the examiner highlighted the need for the guidelines to be updated to reflect the situation of climate change, and also highlighted that companies do have a responsibility towards society. So there were some positive parts of the ruling. So we will keep holding these companies accountable, demanding that we have binding rules on business and rights for people, and continue working with people on the ground impacted to make sure their voices are heard and achieve environmental justice.
You have been listening to Climate Litigation Cases in Asia Pacific, A Step Closer to Climate Justice, a podcast by Real World Radio and Friends of the Earth Asia Pacific.